welcome to the call. Welcome to the World Peace Diet Circle with Dr. Will Tuttle coming up in just a minute here. Thank you all for being here. I'm the coordinator of the World Peace Diet Circle, Steve Prusak, and let's welcome to the call right now Dr. Will Tuttle.
Thank you so much, Steve, and I want to thank everyone who's on the call for being with us. And I actually want to give a big thank you to Steve for being here today. This is Thursday, May 16th, 2013, our third Thursday call, and Steve is actually basically in the midst of, sort of near the beginning of Evolvepalooza, which is a really looks like a wonderful large-scale event, a summit-type event, where I think there's about 40, actually. It looks like about 40 interviews over the next 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, today being the first day. And I think it looks like a terrific event. It's not a purely vegan event, obviously, like Veganpalooza, actually. The one we're going to be doing together next month, in the end of June, is the only really, I think, truly vegan event that we know of online. And we're looking forward to that. But it's just great, Steve, that you were able to make it to be with us here a little bit in the beginning. I know you've got a lot to attend to. And I want to thank everyone again for being here. I want to thank you, Steve. And did you have anything you wanted to mention before? I know you're going to have to leave pretty soon. So is there anything you'd like to share with everyone? We have a wonderful group of vegans here that, working on spreading the message.
It's always nice to share with vegans. Well, the idea of this event, Evolvepalooza, Will, was to go broader with the message and kind of bring in the new age conscious community, coast to coast, George Norrie, kind of even some out there topics that I've never really covered before in this kind of venue. But we've embedded the vegan message throughout it with you and some other speakers that are going to be talking, and of course I'm doing those interviews. And but just to fill everyone in, and just it was just an uncomfortable situation today. Anyone can listen back to the replays if it's at evolvepalooza.com/calendar. I won't mention the session, but I wasn't doing the interview, my co-host was, and this one speaker talked about, it was about weight loss, and she talked about the idea that, you know, I was on a book tour, and I was gaining all this weight, and I was vegan at the time. So I was vegan at the time, and I was eating a lot of plant-based foods, and I was still putting on weight. And I just sat there listening and wondering how it is that I'm producing this event where this person is talking about the idea that they were vegan once, and then it just... She didn't go into detail, didn't get any deeper than that, but it just kind of raises that idea of what we've talked about during the circle, the idea of how people are vegan, then decide it doesn't work, and then go back as if it wasn't working for me, I know it's healthy, or whatever reason it was. And then I was just thinking, if I was doing that interview, what would I have done, and how do we bring this message broad without getting up on a soapbox and turning people off? So I wanted to see what you thought, Dr. Tuttle, of that. Just because it was just such a weird position to be in with all the events you and I have done together?
Right. I can understand that. And like you say, interesting that you were not actually interviewing her directly. Diane, I guess, was. Also, just to mention it here before I say something, if anyone who's listening on the call, any of you who are on the circle, if you have any comments, suggestions, or whatever, feedback, just press star 2 on your phone. Anytime during the call, if you're new, some people are new, this is their first time, just press star 2 on your phone, and we will see it here on our screen, on the computer connection that we have, and we will unmute your phone, and you can talk. So just remember that. And but, Steve, I would just say, first of all, you know, you're doing a great event. You're, like you say, you're embedding the vegan message. You're getting me, I know Gabriel Cousins, quite a few other people who are vegans and bringing the vegan message, along with a lot of people who are actually not vegans, but have done significant work in the human potential movement in various ways, helping to raise consciousness about some things that are very, really important. And that's always a risk, you know. But the thing is, you know, when we do Veganpalooza, it's also a risk involved, even when we're interviewing people who are absolutely vegans. There is a risk in the sense that even among vegans, there are some pretty serious disagreements, and it is possible to create situations that we might not be comfortable with, possibly. You know, I mean, like somebody could get on and talk about how it's really great that we have these laws being passed to protect chickens, say, for example, and then somebody else might get on and say it's really terrible that we're trying to pass laws to protect chickens because that just encourages people to eat more chickens and more eggs, and the, you know, hopefully they wouldn't hear each other and getting into a fight together, but because I think, you know, I guess in the big picture, even that's not necessarily a bad thing in the sense that it just shows that there are different ways of looking at things here. And but in your case, it sounds like the person was making somewhat of a negative judgment about veganism, not directly, but kind of indirectly. And that's certainly not what we would like to do, but it is the kind of thing that does happen. And, you know, hopefully, of course, there are a number of people giving messages, myself and others, that would counteract that. And we're, you know, the thing is, you could say, well, if you were vegan and you're not a vegan anymore because you gained weight, then, you know, you really weren't a vegan because it's not about being vegan to lose weight or something like that. But I know you don't want to get into any kind of adversarial relationship with people that you're interviewing on these things, because it's really about creating a context that is harmonious in the sense that it's helping people to move forward in understanding and working together to bring information to the public. So I'm not sure what to really say, except that if you screen, like some kind of pre-screening maybe for these kind of events where you just let people know that some of the main things we're focusing on are, you know, not to diss any other movements, like not to diss the vegan movement or the women's movement or the gay liberation movement or any movement in any way, and just kind of hopefully get people a little more sensitive to that, perhaps. There's somebody that has their hand up here. I can see who it is. but before I call on Lily, Steve, do you want to respond to what I just said at all, or should we just go ahead and let Lily say something?
I'd like to hear that, but that was helpful. You know, it could have been worse. And when I look at this event, and I partnered with the Conscious Life Expo on it, they put on these events in LA every year, and to be honest, I don't know that even my co-host or the co-producers that are doing this with me, I don't think they're vegetarian. They don't even talk to me about it, so I just kind of gather that maybe it's not their thing. So when we're branching out in the world and we're working with other people and we're trying to shine as the example, it's, you know, finding that balance without preaching that I'm trying to get across. But to keep in mind that we are embedding the message, and Dr. Tuttle's session is tomorrow at 10 a.m., so they're going to hear it.
Right, yeah. In fact, maybe I won't think of saying it later, so if anybody, I encourage everybody to have a listen if you have a chance, because I think it came out really well at 7. We pre-recorded it just recently, and so it's going on at what time? It's 10 a.m. tomorrow.
This one's 10 a.m. This event, we do a combination of pre-recorded and live, primarily live.
Right.
But that was a pre-recorded conference. So definitely worth checking out.
Right. So just go to evolvepalooza.com, and you can register if you haven't already, and listen in. I think you have a 24-hour window also. So yeah, make it right on time. You have 24 hours. You can listen to it. So that's kind of neat. So just anytime after 10 a.m. tomorrow Pacific time, and it's kind of veganism and the bigger picture of spirituality, and so just wanted to mention that. And I find myself somewhat in a similar position as Steve sometimes, like when on Sunday morning at churches when I'm speaking, I'm there really to spread the vegan message, but typically the minister is not vegan, But they know I'm vegan. That's the thing. So usually I don't find myself in an awkward position too much. Occasionally I do. Occasionally, they'll just make it during the announcement, they'll say something like, well, in 3 weeks we're having our Thanksgiving dinner and the church is providing the turkey. Everybody bring something. And I'm sitting there going, oh, yeah. And then I can maybe make some kind of friendly comment about, turkeys being sentient beings or something. I try not to let them get away with it too much. But that's just something to be aware of. I think it's helpful. If you do make any comments in a situation like this, a public forum, you're not doing it so much for the other person, like the woman who made the comment. It's for the, whatever it is, 5,000 or 6,000 people who are going to listen to this whole thing to give them another perspective. So there may even be an opportunity. The good thing is there are plenty of opportunities throughout this thing for the vegan message to be shared in a powerful, positive way. And the amount of negativity toward veganism, I think, will be absolutely tiny. Probably this may be the only little thing. So,
when you think about it, it wasn't the worst comment. It was, they were just saying, I used to be vegan. But it makes me just look ahead and say, well, what if I'm doing an interview and somebody starts promoting meat or raw meat or something that just, would really, really trigger something?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to look ahead to that situation, should it happen, and how to deal with it peacefully and sanely without.
Right. That's a good, maybe say something like, well, we have quite a few other presenters on the Evolvapalooza that are presenting the beneficial aspects of veganism, and it's good, I think, to always be aware that there are other sides to this or something like that. We're not fighting with them, but, not arguing either, not agreeing, but not fighting, like something like that.
Right. Thank you, yes.
Yeah. Lily, I don't know if you have a few seconds to stay on, Steve. Maybe just hear, we can hear what Lily. Lily, you're there?
Sure.
I can see you have your hand up, so. Go ahead.
Lily, are you unmuted? Hello?
Can you hear me?
There we go. Hi.
Oh, yay. I wanted to speak up because this must be Beat Up Vegan Week, I wanted to speak before Steve left, and thank you, Steve, for doing what you're doing. It's just awesome. I'm on a much smaller scale, but I am on international calls daily with people around the world, and I am known in my 12-step community as the vegan sponsor. It's how to keep your weight off type of program. It's a food addictions program, and I am known as the vegan, and I get people call in from all over and they hear me, and I don't discuss veganism, but I sponsor only vegans. And the other day I stepped up a gal to be a food sponsor, because you go through certain, you answer, it's a very profoundly spiritual program that we do. And, of course, being vegan makes it even more profound. And the other day I stepped up a person to be a vegan food sponsor. And, boy, some guy came on and he said, there's no such thing as a vegan food sponsor. There's a food sponsor, but not a vegan food sponsor. And, we both said, we chose to say absolutely nothing and then let the moderator take over. And then after the meeting, I chose to lead the after meeting, and there were maybe 15 other people on there, and I said, let me explain something. I am a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor in this program, and I am I'm a profoundly spiritual vegan. I do it for very profound spiritual reasons, meaning I do not want to harm other beings, and it means a lot to me. And I said this, and there were 15 other people on the line, and I'm telling you, that guy did us a great favor by doing that, because I've gotten more calls now since that happened a few days ago. And so has the gal that I was stepping up to be a new food sponsor practicing as a vegan. And that's all we say, because we can't bring outside issues into our 12-step work. It's not allowed. It's not part of the traditions. But you can say what kind of sponsor you are and whether you're a medical abstinence or whatever. And so I get to put in a plug for veganism daily on an international call, sometimes twice or three times a day on an international call. And, yeah, that's the first time I've ever been beaten up for saying I was a vegan sponsor, but I've decided to word it differently. Now I will say I'm a food inventory step maintenance sponsor practicing as a vegan, and that even puts a bigger spotlight on vegan, so all things work together. This is an idea whose time has come. People are coming out of the woodwork, calling me daily and asking me to sponsor them. I can't sponsor all of them, so I'm trying to develop a team of people, and it's my gal lost 20 pounds in 2 months. You can't do any better than that. So your woman was eating vegan junk food, and that's the bottom line, and that's why she was gaining weight. If you eat a healthy vegan diet and steer clear of vegan junk food, you will lose weight if you're on a program. And that's all I have to say about that. I'm very passionate about it, and I love it.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Lily. Great. Steve, do you want to add anything else to this? I think it's a very instructive, actually, because I think we all find ourselves in these kinds of situations or similar situations, you know.
No, that was about it. I mean, if anyone's just interested in which topic it was, if you're listening back to any of the sessions, it was the one with Colette Baron-Reed. So that was the session. I mean, it's not like a point.
Yeah.
You know, she said this on an event today, and it's I'm allowed to say that. I can tell you who it was. It's not, right? I mean, she said it.
Yeah, sure. Sure, yeah. It's
thanks for
record.
Having
Absolutely.
Me, Dr. Tuttle.
Yeah, sure. All
thanks
right.
For having me.
Well, it's great. It's great to have you with us, and really appreciate the work you're doing, and I encourage everybody to register for Evolvepalooza and especially listen to those that look interesting to you. There's a lot to choose from.
Great. Well,
so,
I'm going to sign off for tonight's call, but thanks. Thank you all for
great. Great. Thanks so much. Yes. All right. So as we go forward here, I want to just take a moment, like I usually do in the very beginning of our monthly call, to just take a moment wherever you happen to be. If you're driving the car, of course, keep your eyes open. But if you're not, if you're comfortable, maybe just take a moment and just turn our attention within, and just give thanks for each other, for this network of compassion and respect for all life that we are part of. The World Peace Diet Circle is just, I think, really in many ways one of many circles, of many communities, of many efforts that people are making on this planet right now to break through the toxic crust of violence toward other living beings and violence towards other human beings and violence towards ecosystems that eating and using animals requires us to participate in. And so we just give thanks for the enormous efforts, really, that each one of us, I think, are making, for the joy that we are helping to build and to spread, and for the caring that we are cultivating in our hearts, and for the connections that we are making with other people and with other movements, that we're really in many ways part of a whole profoundly interconnected movement of awakening, I think, on this planet right now that's critical. And it's so important that we recognize that these issues that we're talking about this evening and the issues of the suffering of animals and of human beings are not academic issues. These are not just theoretical issues. These are really the flesh and blood, literally, issues, and have a reality to them as much as anything, obviously, in this realm of manifestation has a reality, and but have profound significance, I think, for us in our lives. Because when we come here to this planet and at some point we are all of us, I think, everyone alive pretty much, is confronted in some way with the culture's mistreatment of animals on a massive scale, wherever we happen to be, in China or India, United States or Germany or Canada or Australia. I mean, we will see it both indirectly and directly. The question is, how do we respond to that? How do we respond to this? And I think really grappling with this question of how do we respond is the most important thing we can do in our lives today, because it really, in many ways, encourages us and fosters within us the capacity to question not only our culture's programming, but our own morals, our actions, and the spiritual foundation of our lives. And as we respond in ways that are more and more creative and awakened, we get more and more, I think, effective and helpful. So we just give thanks for each other, for this opportunity of a human birth, this brief time on this planet to be together and to cultivate the higher qualities of consciousness and to do what we can to bring these into manifestation into our world. Many blessings to you all, and it's really wonderful to me to be part of this community and to know that there are so many people who care enough to actually bring this message, make the effort to understand and more in depth, you know, how it all plays out in our society, and then to make an effort to bring this message to other people. And so the focus this evening of our call, I decided again not to have an outside person specifically to be with us, because it just seems like it's good to do that, I think, from time to time, and we will continue to do that. We've had some fabulous guests over I think it's like a few years we've been going here. So many well-known people. We've had John Robbins, actually. He just finished up this big event. I think they had so many people signing up for that, the Food Summit with him and Ocean Robbins. Some of you probably had a chance to listen into that. And there was actually quite a few, more than last year, quite a few vegans. And a vegan message was pretty strong in there. But there's a lot of other things too. But basically, you know, we've had many people on the call in the past that have shared wonderfully with us. But I want to make sure that everyone who's on the call, you're here because of your passion, really, I think, not only for the World Peace Diet, but for the underlying movement that the World Peace Diet is about, which is the vegan movement. And understanding our culture, understanding the fact that we're born into a herding culture, what does that actually mean? You know, I think these understandings are really revolutionary and extremely beneficial for us when we learn to sort of integrate the whole thing. So I want to really make sure that you all have a chance to ask me questions or make comments or raise issues, so that together we can feel that we're a community and that we can have our own personal issues with that. If we have particular issues, you know, there's a lot of conflict, I think, as when we're living as vegans in a non-vegan world. It's just sort of hard to avoid, you know, just a few minutes ago, actually. I mean, I wasn't going to mention this, maybe I will just briefly, because Steve mentioned his thing. I'm living in a Malamite, just recently bought a house in Hidden Valley Lake, California, which is Northern California. So we're still living in the RV and traveling quite a bit. We're going to be leaving, actually, in just a few days, heading on a Southern California trip and doing a bunch of lectures there, and then going to Europe. I'll talk a little bit about that too, and then doing a tour up to Northern California and Oregon and Washington and British Columbia. And so we're here, but we're away a lot. But after 17 years living full time on the road, it's nice to have an actual little place where we can you know, I can have the grand piano out and have a planting. We're planting a food forest, which is really kind of exciting. We have all these fruit trees going in with vegetables underneath and berries and all kinds of things. And but anyway, there's this little lake here, and so there was this announcement went out. I'm on the lake committee. You can be on the lake committee if you want. There's a lot of people. I mean, it's a large group of people. I'm not sure how many, maybe like 100 or something. And but anyway, they sent out an email that saying that the fishing derby could not be held because the temperature of the water wasn't right. If they put the fish into the water, the fish would just die. And so, sorry, everybody, we cannot hold the youth fishing derby and teach our children the joys of fishing until the fall. We'll do it in the fall. And so then I wrote a pretty long email, just, you know, a friendly email. I won't go into all the details, but saying that I was actually very relieved to hear that the fishing derby wasn't held because I've learned to see that fish are sentient beings, as sentient really as dogs and cats are, with highly evolved intelligence, and that this kind of activity is teaching children to be desensitized, actually, to the suffering that we cause animals, and it's also causing a lot of suffering to the animals. Even if it's a catch and release, many of them die from the trauma of being hooked. And I said, I'm not writing this to be critical in any way, just to raise the issue that perhaps this is something we don't need to do anymore, because it's not really in the best interests of the environment or of our children if we want to create a world of peace, because we live in a society that, I said something like, is devastating the planet with gusto, and if we keep doing things the way we've been doing them, we're going to find that we're just running into more and more difficulties. So it's a good time to question these things, these traditions. And so then I get an email back a few minutes ago from somebody who just said, who was, I guess, the respondee of the head of the committees, and he just said something like, if we didn't, and I can find the response, it's kind of interesting. And it was not particularly nice to read. Personally, and with all due respect, if our knuckle-dragging ancestors hadn't eaten meat for needed protein, our brains would still be the size of a walnut. I think we were intended to eat meat, and the kids learn the ability one day to feed their families. You should not use a fun, enjoyable youth fishing derby as a platform to spout your animal rights, meat-free beliefs. Fred Looper. So, Fred, that's what Fred said. So, you know, I'm basically not going to worry too much about it. Fred is probably one of these old guys that, you know, it's not going to help to fight with or argue about. But the response to make, from my point of view, to make would be not to argue abstractly in this situation. I mean, these are the important things to say. You know, I could say something like, well, Fred, you know, this theory of that our knuckle-dragging ancestors, if they hadn't eaten meat, they would have, you know, their brains wouldn't have developed, has been completely, that has been shown to be false. I mean, it's really been debunked, that whole myth, and I could send them a few links, maybe something like that. But obviously, it's just the tip of an iceberg that goes far deeper. And so I think in these kind of situations, if we do respond in some way, it's good to essentially agree. You know, that I like you, I have the I've heard these ideas, and they sure do seem to make sense, you know. But then I looked into it some more, and I realized that actually maybe that's not really true, because, and give some information about it, and so forth. But I think some of you were saying in the forums, I noticed, you know, this question comes up quite a bit, that, you know, where do we put our energy? You know, I think that's really the thing, you know, and for me to put a lot of energy with Fred right now is probably not what I'm going to do, because it seems to me that it's better to put the energy that I have, because I don't have all that much extra time to get involved in these kinds of things, except to, you know, plant the seed and move on. I mean, happy to respond if I feel it's appropriate. Like, there's people here who are much more evolved, I think, in the sense of their understanding, and they're still actually not vegans, but they're closer. I mean, they're moving in that direction. They're actually interested. Some of them have even bought the book, but they're still eating eggs. They're still eating dairy. They're still you know, eating fish, and I feel talking to them and giving them more information is more helpful, and it's been good. I mean, some of them actually, a few have actually gone vegan here because of it, and so I think it's important for us to choose our battles. You know, the people that are close to you in your communities or your families or relatives are the ones that we naturally want to try to get to move toward becoming vegan, because we have to interact with them a lot more. And that's understandable. However, just from the point of view of the animals and the suffering and bringing the movement forward, there's so many wonderful things happening, and people are moving more and more in this direction. And I think every time that we make statements that come from a place of love and compassion, we do strike people, whether they know it or not, in a deep place. And on the surface level, they may react, and like Fred did, he just sort of threw up a... you know, the first thing that came to his mind, probably, you know, this sort of standard, how do we get rid of this vegan guy? You know, we just tell him this, and then he'll leave us alone. But of course, I'm not going to leave him alone, and I'll keep bringing up the point in various ways as time goes on. And I think that's the thing. You know, we work on it wherever we can and do it, you know, with love, and but with, you know, with clarity too. And keep it personal. You know, talk about my own personal experience. Yeah, I could say I fished, you know, and I really did. I was taught to fish. I learned to fish. But boy, you know, I am so glad that the last time I fished, which was on that walk my brother and I took, heading down to, ended up in Alabama eventually, and I had to kill that fish myself. Really slammed the fish down. And I realized this is it. I'm not going to ever do this again. And so I think, you know, responding personally like this is definitely the best way, because no one can argue with that kind of an experience. So I'm glad I'm talking about this, because it's giving me a little clarity of what I think would be the best thing to do in this kind of a situation. But living as vegans in a non-vegan world is probably one of the most challenging things we can experience in many ways, because not only, this is one of the things I've been thinking about lately, not only do we find, actually, that as we refine, in many ways, our sensibilities, and as we elevate, really, that's what's happening, our moral understanding, and become more inclusive in our kindness, which is, you know, all things that really are important for us in terms of social and intellectual and spiritual growth, psychological growth, emotional growth, everything. You know, it's making the world a better place for everyone, for sure, on every level, environmentally, socially, culturally, in every way. What we are doing is making the world a better place for everyone. And it's an unselfish action, essentially. And yet, in the face of that, we are very often, directly or indirectly, criticized, condemned, mocked, or ignored, or ostracized. And it's basically, that can be very hard on people, because not only are we losing our connection with friends and relatives and neighbors and co-workers and co-parishioners or whatever people, we find ourselves, you know, relationships getting more strained. But then we can also find that we don't have any other outlets, I mean, other community members, or we can even find sometimes, which I think is unfortunate, that there's quite a bit of strife even within the vegan community itself. I mean, the vegan community is a sort of a vast, loose-knit community of all kinds of people. A lot of people call themselves vegans for various reasons also. But even among people who consider themselves to be ethical vegans in the way that Donald Watson coined the term, there's quite a bit of disagreement about tactics, you know, about how we should do and where we should put our energy. And so that can also be... can be disheartening, because not only, you know, we like to be able to turn to other vegans and just find agreement and love and caring and friendship and inclusion and so forth, and yet very often we will find even vegans have their their idiosyncrasies and can be hard-hearted and narrow-minded about certain things. So that, I guess, all of those things, I think, are just realities to be aware of. And the thing is, I think, in many ways, once we get a certain a degree of understanding about what veganism is, we will not go back. I mean, we're not going to go back to eating animals again or knowingly paying to harm them. We've gone beyond that, and I think that's a beautiful thing when we hit the point of no return, you know. and then whatever happens in the outer world, I think what we realize more and more, and so what I'm seeing increasingly, of course, and all the time, is that what veganism is really, in many ways, is another name for a vast spiritual path that is literally probably unending in its scope and magnificence and magnitude, where we are literally questioning everything that our society has taught us and that we're telling ourselves. I mean, we not only question the outer voices, we're questioning the inner voices that were planted in us by our first grade school teacher and by our parents and everybody else about the nature of reality, you know, and the massive amount of sexism, for example, in our society, the domination of the feminine, which is so deeply rooted in our society. And by the way, if anyone has anything you'd like to say, again, you'd like to, any questions or comments about anything I'm saying, please press *2 here. But there's a couple of points I really did want to make here this evening. One of them is this idea of sexism and the domination of women and of the feminine principle. There's a couple of things on the resources list that you got for May 2013. There's this Emily Deschanel, I think is how you pronounce her name, the well-known movie actress. She's made recently a short video, and it's on the PETA website, about the cruelty of dairy production, for example. And there's more and more connections, I think, that are being made between the violence in agriculture and cruelty to females and to females in our society. And I'm hoping that the World Peace Diet perspective on this, which is really linking these very intimately, will gain more traction. You know, we just had, I think, in the last couple of days, Angelina Jolie. I'm not much into the mass media, but I understand she's a famous something actress or whatever, and having both of her breasts removed, not because she has cancer, but just to avoid the possibility of possibly getting it in the future. And John McDougall made the point, which I immediately thought of myself, that this is a very sexist thing. I mean, that in the medical industry, for example, when men, may get prostate cancer, they never go in and do surgery and remove it. They adopt a wait and see, you know, sort of a cautious waiting kind of mentality. We'll just, you know, we won't do anything. We'll just, you know, keep an eye on it. But with women and breast cancer, they say, well, let's just go in and cut them off, you know. And there's this, he thinks, and I agree, there's this basic feeling of domination of women in our society in general. And it, you can see it playing out massively, I think, in the medical industry. There's another video on here that I listed on the resources for May 2013. It's on Vimeo. It's free. It's called The Business of Being Born. You know, John McDougall makes the point that it's at least $50,000 in their pockets when they do the kind of double mastectomy they did on her. And it's many thousands. I can't remember the amount of money, but in the United States, the rate of cesarean sections is just skyrocketing. And they're, you know, now movie stars, according to this movie, when they're, instead of having a baby in the way people did it for millions of years, you know, just the natural way, they go into a hospital and they have a cesarean section and a tummy tuck. You know, they do it all in one. So it's like they didn't have to go through anything, and they're all they just continue on with their lives, and there's no, you know, it's a huge medical bill. I mean, the hospitals make a lot of money. They can do all this in one thing, but it's this enormously invasive, and I think in many ways really devastating, with devastating consequences to the baby and to the mother of the disconnectedness to their own bodies and the disconnectedness from their children and what that does psychologically to the children. I mean, this whole huge issues. I mean, to me, this is so critical to just having a sense of how the babies, when they're born, and this movie really shows it, are just taken from their mothers immediately, and they're isolated, so they don't get infections, and they're not allowed to bond with the mother. And on a dairy operation, or on a chicken operation, or on a pig operation, on any of these operations, the babies are stolen from the mothers, typically early on. Sometimes they're allowed to nurse a little while, like on the pigs, but not very long. And of course, the mothers are immobilized in that situation. On the dairy operations, they're just taken away. In the chicken operations, they never see their mothers. And most of them, they never see their mothers, really. They're just taken away very quickly. And so the babies are isolated. I mean, just a horrible trauma. This is not ever supposed to happen. The little chicks are supposed to be under their mother's wings, and she protects them. And the dairy and calves, obviously, being nursed and being loved and licked. And so when little boys and little girls are taken away from their mothers at birth, according to many psychologists and sociologists that I've read, there's a deep wound psychologically that happens where they just never feel safe and at home and part of a benevolent universe. And according to some psychologists, it creates, especially in boys, a deep rage and hatred of women, even to take them away like that. And you know, these are things. This is what we do to animals for money. It's done for money, and yet in many ways we're doing it to people for money in the same way. And we see the evidence of this, I think, in our society quite a bit. And that's why, from my point of view, going vegan is such an enormously powerful thing, because we're actually going to the root of the problem. We're saying we are not going to support this, and we're going to understand it, and we're going to spread this message to other people so that we can transform our society at the deepest level. Because if we try to go in and have and reform the birthing movement without reforming the fact that we're doing this to millions of animals and sowing the seeds for this to happen to millions of other living beings, then we are not getting to the root of it. We're still paying for it, we're still eating it, we're still feeding it to our children, we're still causing it, and as we sow, so shall we reap. So our society is in extreme, I think, in an extremely vulnerable position right now on every level, socially and environmentally, climatically, all these things. And as we go more and more deeply into all of it, we see the connections to our violence towards animals for food, even though those connections are not made explicit by the media at all, and for good reason. So I think, to help ourselves understand these things and then to deal with this effectively ourselves and to bring this message to other people, of those who are capable of understanding it, I think is the greatest gift we can give to the world. As I think you all know, I feel that way. It's the greatest gift we can give to our loved ones and to ourselves, obviously, and to animals and future generations and hungry people and slaughterhouse workers and the whole web of life. We're all interconnected on this together. And so there's a few more things I want to say, actually, on this line. But, Tara, you've had your hand up here for a little while. You pressed star 2, so I'd like to go ahead and hear what you have to say. So I'm unmuting you, and go ahead.
Hi, Will. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
You could keep talking as far as I was concerned. The only thing I wanted to say was, firstly, that I am so deeply honored to know all of you. I have really been feeling this recently. We are so fortunate to be connected to each other, and it just resounds. out beyond us. And that I've also recently realized that, because I don't know if anybody gets even a fraction of the static in their world that I get, then, you know, you have my deepest empathy as well. It's not easy, as Will said. It's very, very, this is not an easy path, and I can understand why people vary from it from time to time. But
right.
I've had a realization recently that we are like seed pods. We're just big, lovable seed pods. We're just chock full of all of this information that we know to be true. And we may not be able to always even speak it, because it maybe won't be heard, or it's not even allowed to be able to speak this. But every time somebody bumps up against this, and hearing Steve talk made me think about that, whether that bump is a hug, or whether that bump is a nudge, or an elbow, or whatever the bump is, then our seeds just, you know, our little pollen, you know, just goes out and attaches to them. It can't help but do so. Some, we may only be the first person to plant that seed, but at some point in the future, there'll be a second person and a third person, or a second situation and a third situation, and it will awaken. And so it's not all for naught. You know, this isn't a hopeless endeavor that we're involved in. We are the change that we want to see in the world, and therefore anybody that comes in contact with us is affected. Directly or
right.
Indirectly. And that's powerful. That's an awesome thing. Everything I hear about, every situation, every interaction with people that I interact with, news items, I just can't help but, you know, I don't want to say I'm indoctrinated, but I keep going back to, you know, I see the source, I see the source, I see the source. You know, we've got to work on the source, because if the source cause wasn't there, then this would not be happening. And it's so clear now, so incredibly clear. And so we are doing important work. This is, like Will said, the most important work. But it's not a hopeless endeavor, even if nobody was able to even to hear your words. Just coming in contact with you, I feel like we have an effect on people. That's all I wanted to say.
Great. Thanks so much, Tara. You know, I think those are very important words. I hope everybody could understand you, what you were saying. The idea that we're seed pods that we have within ourselves, we've cultivated within ourselves this not only information, but an understanding and I think a certain vibration, really, in a sense, a certain emotional or a way of being in the world, and it does affect other people. So I think it's important for us not to despair that we're not reaching more people, but to understand that very often we don't see the changes on the outer world, but they're still happening beneath the surface. In physics, there's the whole notion of the explicate order and the implicate order. And the explicate order is sort of the manifest world, but in the realm of physics and actually in biology as well, the whole understanding that things change at a deeper level before you ever see it in the outer world at all. There's a lot of change that goes on at the deeper level. And I think, you know, for example, we have the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals, where every day at noon, wherever we are, we say the prayer, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. We just pause and hold that feeling and that thought in our hearts. And there's, you know, hundreds of people all over the world doing this. And I think just at that level, you're not even talking to anybody necessarily, but just holding that feeling strongly that compassion is blessing all beings in the world, that it embraces everyone, and that we're part of that, and we're sending our love and compassion to all beings, whatever their situation is. And that creates a certain frequency, I think, in our feelings, that when we then go ahead and interact in the world with people, I think there's a good chance that they pick that up as well. And it will also color what we say and how we say it. It doesn't mean that everything suddenly gets easy by any means. But I think it does mean that basically, like, I love this saying by Lao Tzu. It's actually the quote at the top of the May 2013 resources sheet that you got, two sheets actually. The quote is, if you want to awaken all of humanity, then awaken all of yourself. You're right there. That's an amazing statement. If you want to awaken all of humanity, then awaken all of yourself. If you want to eliminate the suffering in the world, then eliminate all that is dark and negative in yourself. In other words, dark and negative, I think he means the shadows, the things that we really don't want to deal with, the wounds that are very painful to deal with, but these are things that we can work with. So he says that, and then finally, truly the greatest gift you have to give is that of your own self-transformation. I mean, isn't that just incredibly beautiful? That I really feel, I mean, that sums it up better than almost anything I've ever read. If you want to awaken all of humanity, then awaken all of yourself. If you want to eliminate the suffering in the world, then eliminate all that is dark and negative in yourself. Truly the greatest gift you have to give is that of your own self-transformation. Because I think it's very important for us to work in groups together. And to, you know, one person by themselves really doesn't have a lot of power. And yet, to work effectively in a group, it's very important that everybody in the group is working on their own self-transformation. So this is the great paradox, I think. We're all in this together. No one can do it all by themselves. And yet, it's vital that everyone does it all by themselves. In the sense that we take full responsibility for transforming all of ourselves. You know, all of ourselves. That means our relationships with our husbands and wives and children and parents and workers and everyone in our daily life and with our own feelings and with our finances and with our work and with our bodies, our health. You know, all of these things question the programming of our culture that makes us see everything as a war. You know, I think that's really the thing that's important to understand, to understand these underlying paradigms. You know, we're taught that the body has to mobilize its defenses against the invading bacteria, and we need to have send in the reinforcements of some pharmaceutical drug to take out the enemy. It's this whole sense of everything's a war, and in order to grow crops, we have to kill the pests that would try to invade, use weed killer and use pesticides, and it's all a big war. And in order to be successful financially, we have to compete in the marketplace and sell ourselves against other people. And in order to be successful educationally, we have to compete. And there's this constant, very deep level message that we've been injected with from the time we were infants, that life is basically a struggle and essentially a war, a fight, and it's everybody against everybody else. Basically, this is really deeply embedded in us, in our language and in the images and the theories of evolution. I mean, all these different things. And in our religious is also this whole war thing going on. And so I think what veganism is in many ways is questioning all of that and becoming a vehicle for love, a radical questioning and being a vehicle for love for even the most vulnerable beings that we would normally just use because they're defenseless. And we don't do that. We show them compassion, we show them kindness, and we stand up for those who are weak. We actually not only do not do that ourselves, but we encourage others as well. You know, and that's, I think, both directly and indirectly, I think it's very helpful to once we understand this, to find ways we can creatively bring this message to the world. And it's wonderful to see all the different ways people are doing that creatively. And I really also want to just say that I think that it's totally fine for us to cultivate ways that we are making a living, you know, bringing an income by helping others be vegan, or by spreading the vegan message, or by blessing others. I mean, we can do it as volunteers. I think that's really how it's basically done. We just do it with no thought of reward. But it's just really great to see. You know, there's this article here, also in the resources. It's called A Vegan Office in D.C. It's a feature article, and I think in the Washington, one of the newspapers in Washington, D.C., but it's about the fact that PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, is an office building they have, and everyone who works there is required to be vegan on the job. I mean, that while they're there eating lunch together, no one can bring any meat, dairy, or eggs, or you know, no one can do that. They may, and so a lot of people who work for PCRM are already vegan, but a lot of them aren't. You know, they need specialists in software design or this and that, whatever. They're completely not vegan, you know, but they're vegan on the job, and they're vegan while they're there. And so, I mean, I just think of Neil Barnard, this one guy, you know, with his vision, and then now there's 64 people working in this office that are all being vegan. And but that all of us, in a certain way, have the opportunity of a human life to do in our own unique way, whatever that is. If we're like Lily was just talking about, being able to be on the phone so that we're heard by others, and just, you know, repeating this the vegan message rhythmically in a way that it gathers momentum in the consciousness of the listeners. Or we can do it if we're educators in some way with children or with other adults, or if we're musicians or writers in some way, or if we're in a church situation where we can bring up the message rhythmically, sort of repeatedly, and help raise awareness that way, or in any however we are, on our Facebook page. And there's so many ways that this can be done, and I think more and more we're finding ways that we can be reimbursed also for this activity. And we see restaurants and coaching and cooking classes and whatever, different things happening more and more. So I just applaud those who are creative in doing this. And I also have to say, maybe one other thing here, just because I think this is a huge thing, and I'll just put my two cents in, because I think it is important, that there's a kind of what seems to be a split in our movement between the welfareists and the abolitionists, you know, those who think that we should try to make, you know, work for veganism, but also do what we can to reduce the suffering that animals are going through in factory farms and slaughterhouses. And there are others who feel that it's just not a good idea to try to reduce the suffering that animals are going through in slaughterhouses and factory farms, because that just gives the industry a lot more ammunition. It creates this view in the public mind that these animals are well treated and they're making an effort to treat them well, and so eating animal foods is just fine. And there's a lot of tension here between these perspectives that seems to be increasing for a variety of reasons. And personally, my own take on it for myself is that I do not put much energy, if any at all, into promoting things that will improve the welfare of animals in their suffering on factory farms and slaughterhouses. I do think it's a step in the right direction when that does happen, potentially. I mean, maybe not. I think you have to take it on a case-by-case basis. For me, the most important thing is to try to help people go toward understanding what animal rights is. I mean, that animals have interests, that their interests are as important to them as my interests are to me, and that by changing the way I'm living and moving toward veganism, I am actually making a significant transformation, not only in my impact on animals, but also helping to spread this message so that we can transform our society. And that's to me is an enormously empowering and rewarding work to do. But what I've noticed in many ways is that it is the organizations that promote the welfare. It's the people who are being paid by organizations who promote welfare, animal welfare, improving animal welfare, and they're getting paid by their organizations, and the organizations are raising funds by doing campaigns to improve the welfare of animals. That's the one of the primary ways that any of these organizations actually make money, is by engaging in campaigns where they say, look at this terrible thing that's happening on these pig farms. You know, send us the money and we're gonna make that stop. We're gonna make new regulations so these pigs are no longer in confined and farrowing crates, or we're going to do a campaign to expose the terrible treatment that Walmart does to their chickens or their pigs or their cows, or we're going to do another campaign against McDonald's. And the people, you know, they show a video, people get outraged, and they give their money, and it's a campaign, and they make money. And then, but the thing is that often these organizations will make money and do that and use it for these campaigns. But they also use, some of them anyway, use the funds that they get from these campaigns to do vegan education. Because I think in a way it's hard to make a lot of money just doing vegan education. People mostly won't give money for vegan education. Vegans will, but we're still such a small movement. So for that reason, I'm not totally opposed to this. I think that I can see the economic reality of it. You have people like Gary Francione, just as an example, who he gets paid to be a law professor, and he's hypercritical of all these organizations who are doing welfareist things, but he doesn't have to make any money. He doesn't have to do any fundraising. So as soon as you have to do fundraising, in a way, it's a problem. And it's very interesting. I was invited, actually, to speak at the Animal Rights Conference at the closing plenary to give a rousing vegan talk, something like that, at the very end. This is going to be at the end of June in Washington, D.C., the Animal Rights Conference, the annual Animal Rights Conference. And it's going to be a debate between Gary Francione and Bruce Friedrich, Gary Francione representing the animal rights or animal abolition perspective, and Bruce Friedrich, of course, who used to work for PETA and now works for Farm Sanctuary, representing the welfareist perspective, the importance of improving the welfare of animals. And they've asked me to moderate the debate. And I think I know why, in a sense. I mean, I think part of it is that I mean, besides the fact that both of these people I consider my friends, I think, you know, the idea is to try to understand deeper reality here and not just get locked in a polarizing debate. So I think as we get into this more and more, we'll find ourselves perhaps sometimes distracted by this, all this stuff, but it's kind of unavoidable. And but I just want to encourage everyone to that from my point of view, the most important thing to do is the inner self transformational work, where we become what veganism is all about. We become a loving force in the world of kindness and compassion. And I think that using our intuition and cultivating ourselves spiritually will give us a foundation that will make our life worthwhile no matter what. And then when veganism flows from that, I think it's much more effective. So, again, I feel really honored, I'll just say this, that all of you have somewhat of a similar perspective on this call, that you value not just the sort of surface material level of doing social justice kind of work, you know, just fighting against the enemy. You know, they're the bad guys. They're the ones. They're the enemy. But to realize that this, at a very deep level, our society has infected all of us with a toxic program. And even Fred, this guy that sent me this email about how, you know, I should keep my animal rights thoughts to myself or something like that, you know, that he's been infected. And so there's no point in fighting against him. You know, we're all, I think the great perspective is to realize that we're not, we shouldn't fight against each other, that the problem is the cultural program. We've been indoctrinated, and to free ourselves from that. And that means doing the inner work on every level, nonviolent communication, the principles of sharing our own personal story, and really learning to listen to others seriously, honoring their perspective, and realizing that many different perspectives together help create a more completely whole picture, actually. That's something I've been learning from the Jain tradition. We've got a few people with hands up here. Mark, calling from Cincinnati. I'm going to unmute your phone. Glad you could join us. Can you hear me? Go ahead and say something and make sure we can hear you.
Hello?
Hey, hi, Mark. Yes.
Oh, great. Glad to be here. And I'd like to say a little bit.
You know, let me, before you go on, let me just say there's some new people here. Mark Stroud, just for those of you who don't know, from Cincinnati, was one of the first people really to really see the significance of the World Peace Diet in terms of a educational tool, and started the first World Peace Diet study group in Cincinnati back, gosh, I think in 2006 or something, after the book had just come out, and has been leading these study groups ever since in Cincinnati, and now we have the World Peace, I can't remember the title, the Jubilee, and the monthly, in the month of October every year, we have a gathering in Cincinnati, as well as quite a lot of other things going on. I was just actually there for the first Cincinnati Veg Fest, and Mark, as usual, was kind of behind the scenes helping to get that off the ground as well. So it's just great to have you with us, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh, it's great to be here. We just had a study group meeting on Monday, and we had a Indian food theme, and 40 people showed up, so it was a real nice showing.
Awesome, 40. And, wow.
Yeah. And a lot of new people came. There's a yoga class right before the potluck, so we always invite people to come. And it was interesting this past Monday because usually we'll get maybe two or three. People are not prepared. They haven't prepared anything, so they probably feel a little bit uncomfortable coming to a potluck because they're not bringing anything or they have other plans. So we'll usually get two or three people after the yoga class to stay for the potluck. But this Monday, I think there was a shift in the wind, and I think 10 people stayed for the potluck. So in addition, another 30 came. So there were 40 courageous, brave souls there. And the theme was the roots of Ahimsa from India. And there were two new facilitators that are in our teacher training program. So Lauren and Stephen were leading the study group, and they had planned to show the a part of Earthlings, the section where they show that most of the leather comes from cows in India and how they're treated horribly. Yeah. And then at the last minute, we knew that there were so many new people there, we thought, well, maybe we better go to Plan B. So we went to Plan B, and we showed a video of Sharon Gannon and David Life of Jiva Mukti Yoga, and they were talking about the yamas and the niyamas, and specifically about Ahimsa. And so it was more of a dialogue between the two of them. So they said the same thing that people would have seen in the video without all the graphic reality. So it was still really powerful, and I think those people will come back and not be scared away if we had shown that segment of Earthlings. And so it was just a real powerful powerful meeting. Everybody, after we looked at the video, which is about 10, 15 minutes, everybody broke into groups. And it was also really great that we had just happened that night that there were five or six of our yoga teachers there. So each group had a teacher from the studio. So they definitely had somebody that was essentially a World Peace Diet facilitator, because anybody that goes through our teacher training is really gets that kind of training. And so the discussions were real lively from each group. And then afterwards, we all came together, and then each group reported what they had discussed and the feelings and the thoughts and comments. So it was just a real powerful evening, and people were just ecstatic about it. And so I'd like to just compare that to some of the earlier conversation. And on the one hand, say, yes, as Tara was saying, that there is a lot of work. And at the same time, it's a deep work I am finding it easier, actually, than it was, say, 40 years ago. And I'm a vegan 40 years this year. And back in the 60s, back in the 60s and 70s, well, during that whole Woodstock era, I saw a lot of people who were marching for peace. I went to the big peace march when I was 16 in New York City with over a million people. And I saw a lot of people that were marching for peace. And at the same time, in Woodstock and the, all the flower children and so forth and so on, none of the people that I knew back then that were my age group are today vegan, except for one friend of mine, I think, is a massage therapist that lives in Corvallis, Oregon, and she is a vegetarian. So when I see the countless people coming to our studio, and particularly those that go through our teacher training, that become vegan and their families become vegan and their friends become vegan, and the influence they have on their lives and this constant extension of a web of compassion, it's clear to me that while it was great that there was this great change that people like to think about that took place during the, that time, that a lot of it was coming from the outside. And while it was great and it was important that it did, what I'm seeing now is that the change is coming from within. And as you said earlier, that's the real important change that has to take place. So it just inspires me and keeps me going to see all so many people, the newer generations that are changing from within and are steadfast in their change and have become active and proactive and to make a difference in the world, that I just see it continuing to snowball. It's much more, it may not be in the news like it was back in the 60s and the 70s and things of that nature, even though I think something like an Occupy Wall Street is a symptom. It's not creating the change so much. It's a symptom of the change that's taking place within people on a deeply rooted basis. And more I see people welcoming the message of the World Peace Diet and knowing that it's that spiritual change that's at the heart and soul of what's going to create heaven on earth. So I'm really glad to be here.
Wow. Thanks, Mark. There's a lot you said that I think I just want to maybe sum up a couple of things, you know, just for everyone. I really think it's fantastic to make the connection between the World Peace Diet and spiritual paths like yoga, for example. And Mark and Anna Ferguson also, who teaches yoga there, work together. And what Mark was mentioning in the beginning about the yamas and niyamas, the fundamental teachings of yoga, ahimsa is the very first rung on the ladder. And so the idea is that if we're going to be successful in yoga and not just sort of shallowly practicing the postures and studying yoga, but to actually get imbibe the spirit of it, then we have to understand the deep philosophy as well as the actual practice, which means to ahimsa means to strive for not only nonviolence but for active compassion for all life. And so through that, I think through helping people to connect their passion for yoga, which is really a spiritual yearning for greater, not only greater flexibility and health, but I think also for more clarity, inner peace, a sense of well-being, that it really starts with our treatment of others and specifically of animals. And so I just want to encourage everyone to make those connections for yourselves in not only in your own personal life, like Mark's talking about, the transformation in our society and the inner work that has to be done, but also maybe as part of bringing the message of veganism to your community, that there may be a lot of allies among yoga studios or and other progressive spiritual movements where you can bring these ideas in and help spread them to a lot more people who are really open to these ideas. They're very open, and it's been great for me as Madeline and I travel around the United States One of the best places for us to give lectures is at yoga studios, not only within Sharon Ganner and David Life's tradition, but quite a few others, Kali Ray and a whole bunch of others. Some of them are friends of Mark and Anna, and some of the other ones are just independent or whatever. But there's a lot of yoga teachers who understand the importance of veganism and are teaching it, and more in their teacher trainings, they're using the World Peace Diet to train the teachers. And I think bringing in veganism and spirituality through yoga, as just one example, is really important and important work. And I'm really glad that, Mark, you talked about that tonight, having these potlucks, showing these videos, having discussions, small group discussions. You're helping people to really get clarity about how this all works. It's very important. So thanks so much, Mark. It's great to hear from you.
Yeah. Thank you, Will. And just also mention that the big potluck, the Jubilee Peace Fest, is coming up in October, and it's an opportunity for people to come from all over the world, all over the United States, to come together and to spend 4 days in this, what some people refer to as a love bubble, and they just don't want to leave, to really see what life is able to be like and to go away with a renewed enthusiasm and vision for that possibility and to take it out into the world. So there'll be, of course, a lot of great speakers. And it really is the only festival of its kind with music and vegan food all day long, 4 days, and yoga. And there's just so much going on. So I just would like to enthusiastically invite everyone to come this year. It's the fifth year anniversary celebration, and I'll guarantee that one of your dreams will come true when you come to the Jubilee.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be October 17th to the 20th, I believe, this year.
Yes.
And
definitely.
All that, and all the vegan food that Mark's talking about, he prepares himself, or his team does, in the kitchen. So if one of your dreams is to have 4 days of delicious vegan food that you don't have to cook yourself, that dream will come true.
Yes, it will.
It's a great event. Yeah, it's a really great event. A lot of great speakers, and we've been every single year. And I think it a lot of wonderful ripples go out from there. So thanks, Mark, for doing that so faithfully, and thanks for being on the call today. It's great to hear from you.
Thank you for the inspiration and your work.
Yeah. Great. All right. Thanks. And then we have a couple more people with their hands up. Rebecca from Michigan. It's good to hear. You have your hand up.
Hi.
You want to say something?
Yeah,
hi.
I just wanted to get – hi. I wanted to get back to the abolition versus welfare debate and
right.
just say that I really adore you, Will, because I think you have such a level – and an honest and real approach to what we need to do. And I get so frustrated. I spend way too much time on Facebook, but I get so frustrated by those struggles between the vegans because it's not doing anything. And all that time
right.
that we spend in that endless argument that no one can win could be spent going out there and talking to people. And it seems like it's so much of our society now is there's just duality. And people are always fighting for the right to be right. And nobody's seeing
right.
the gray area, you know. And that the HSUS stuff, I mean, yeah, okay, maybe they get money and maybe they promote welfareism, but they're doing other stuff that other people aren't doing too. You know, they're the
right,
only people
right.
fighting for the wolves
right.
in Michigan. And
right.
they have a lot of campaigns that are very visible. And these affect
right.
people that other people aren't getting to. You know, there's
right.
people that have heard of HSUS that have never heard of Gary Francione and never will.
No,
you
most,
know, but they're
of course, most
but they're being
right.
concerned. And we have to start being a little bit happy about any sort of improvement in, you know, or a move to veganism, even if it's vegetarianism, which we all know is not the be-all and end-all, but it's something. And if we take nothing but the absolute, we're never going to get it.
Right.
Anyway, it's just really frustrating me because I want to shake these people and say, stop spending hours and hours and hours writing these long things and get out there and do something.
Right. I know. I feel the same way about, you know, the most important thing is to help spread the vegan message to the public. That's where our focus, I think, really can best be focused on. So, anyway, thanks so much
for
all the work you're doing. Pardon me?
There's also the, even within the vegans, I just read a bunch of stuff tonight about raw versus, you know, junk food vegan or whatever. It's like there's always an argument, and somebody's always got to be right, you know?
Yeah. There's this wonderful, there's three fundamental truths in the Jain tradition, and I've been speaking at the Jain conferences, and so I've been, you know, studying a little bit of Jainism. And the first one is ahimsa. There's another one that's called aparigraha, which is not possessiveness, and there's another one, anikantha, which means not being right. It's basically the idea of a multiplicity of views, being open to that there's other ways that are also right, other perspectives that are also right. And to me, that's a very important part of nonviolence, is to realize that there are different perspectives, and they all contribute together to being, quote-unquote, right. But there isn't necessarily one exact specific person or perspective that's right in a narrow sense. And I think as we deepen our study of things and our self-understanding, we can begin to feel into all these things. So thanks for raising that. I want to ask you, last time we talked, I think a month ago, you were going to have a big event there, wasn't that?
Yes.
Go well? You had, I think, John Sally speaking.
Yes, went well. That was our opening night was with John Sally, and that was probably the most successful event. We had a lot of food samples. We had we had about 140 people attended, which was good. And we probably got more non-vegans at that event than we did at any of our others. But that was really successful. Right. I mean, they came for John Sally, and he was wonderful.
I was on the health cruise, and basically it's a vegan cruise of about 1,000 people, and there's a lot of speakers. But Helen and I were saying the only other person besides us that was there with a vegan perspective was John Sally. Everybody else was talking about the health benefits, which is good. You know, it's good to know about the health benefits and all that. But he was the only one that just stood up there and talked about not hurting animals.
Oh.
And so I really loved that about him. That's his thing, and it's great. So.
Well, we just had a follow-up meeting last night, and we talked about, you know, this was our first time doing something like this. We aren't 100% sure that we'll do exactly the same thing next year or anything next year, but hopefully we're not all too exhausted to do that we can't do something. And you know, we were playing around with ideas, so we'll be looking at some of you other people too and what you're doing to get ideas from, steal from, and they all said, well, everything started small. Veg Michigan started, you know, they probably had 50 people in their first year, and now this past year we had 5,000. So
that's fantastic. No, I think it's great, and I hope that people. This is Rebecca Stuckey, right? You pronounce your last name. You're
like Cookie.
Stuckey. Sorry, Rebecca Stuckey, and you know, please share with each other. Hopefully. If you have questions, if you think you might like to put on an event like that in your community, instead of reinventing the wheel, I think we can learn a lot from each other. So I'm really glad that you're sharing about the event, and we have the community forums, which I'm glad to see a lot of people are writing and sharing ideas there, and there's so much we can learn from each other. So thanks so much, Rebecca. It's great to talk to you. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, thanks. All right. We have also another hand up here with Tara again. Okay, Tara, would you want to go ahead and contribute something?
Hi. Getting hi again. We are all thinking on the same wavelength, I think, but something that I've been thinking about lately, too, is our ability to receive new information. And I think that vegans are a little bit better at being able to do this because we're vegans. If we haven't
received new information, then we probably wouldn't be vegans. But the ability to receive new information as a vegan and getting better and better at that and allowing other points of view is really important. And a lot of times the, like Fred's response is simply because he doesn't yet have that ability to even consider new information. He's just so indoctrinated with his way of thinking that it's just not anything to even think of to consider new information. There's that kind of knee-jerk reaction. And something else somebody once told me, which might help with perspective when you get really obtuse reactions, is that the deepest brainwashing to speak of is usually shows itself in ourselves and in others by our most vehement reaction. You know, if we just say no, and we feel our solar plexus and our heart starts beating and we're like, no way, I'm not, you know, or we're just very much against something, it's usually because there's a very deep programming that we're dealing with. And if somebody else is reacting in that way, then they too are dealing with some deep programming. So understanding that they're not lashing out at us and we're not lashing out at them because we too still do this. We still have programming that will surface, but that just that's a sign that if you start feeling that way physically, viscerally, that there's some deep programming that needs to be addressed and rooted out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I can hear what you're saying. I think we run into that when we talk to people. Sometimes, though, too, it can be, I think I notice a deep visceral feeling sometimes just because it just touches in to me the terrible suffering these animals go through and the fact that people don't care about it can really hit me hard. I just like, oh, man, I don't think it's a program. I think it's just my sense of despair over the fact that it seems like people just don't care, and what are we going to do about this? You know, so I feel so strongly about not wanting to suffer without you know, in this way. And if people would just do the simple thing of opening their eyes to the results of their actions, these animals wouldn't have to suffer. You know, so it's like we're so near and yet so far. It seems like it's such a relatively easy thing for people to grasp, and if people just grasped it, everything would change dramatically very quickly. So it's very close, it's tantalizing on one level, and yet there's a sense that, wow, it's this whole long journey we have to go through to actually get there, you know, as a society. That can bring up feelings too, but I appreciate you sharing that idea too. I think there are definitely situations where we feel that visceral feeling, and it's a result of a program getting triggered. We're getting kind of late here. I don't like to go more than an hour and a half, and we still have a hand up. So is that good?
That's it. That's all. I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, great. Thanks. All right. And then we have Diane. It's so good to see that you're with us. And I just unmuted your phone. So do you want to share an idea or have any question or thought?
Well, actually, yeah, there's several things, and I'll make it real quick because I know it is getting late. But
sure.
Thanks for this opportunity, and it's great to talk to you, Will. And if you ever get to Kansas again, let me know. We'd love to have you.
Yes. Thank you. Definitely.
The main thing that I was calling about, and I wanted to get your take on this, was I organized the local vegetarian meetup group, and I kind of inherited it from someone else who got busy and then moved. And so it is a vegetarian meetup group, but most of the core members, including me, have since become vegan. And so we hold a monthly vegan potluck. And we're starting to get new members, who are not necessarily even vegetarian, let alone vegan, which is great that there's more interest. But occasionally this comes up, and this came up again last Monday. I specifically say that it's a vegan potluck, but I have not necessarily defined vegan, so I'm not sure if it's just a misunderstanding, but one of our new members brought a vegetarian lasagna with dairy cheese, And so I didn't say anything at the time because I don't want to alienate, but I don't want it to get to be a vegetarian potluck. So I'm kind of trying, struggling with how to deal with the situation, whether I should contact them directly and just tactfully kind of say that because most of us are vegans, we encourage this to be a vegan potluck, and if you have any questions or need any ideas, please let me know, or if I should just send out a group thing, or how I should really deal with this. And because, like I say, we are getting more people who are not necessarily even vegetarian but are going to more vegetarian meals, because there were a lot of people eating that lasagna. So and we had, let people know. So anyway, I was wondering what you would suggest about that. And then one other quick comment about the yoga thing. I also have a friend who is a yoga instructor, and she was vegan for years, but she said she did not do well on it, and her instructor told her that she needed to start eating. I think she was eating like fish and eggs. I mean, it's not, so she hasn't, she doesn't eat all animals, but she does eat some animal products. And her response to the ahimsa question was that by not eating animals, it was harming her, so she was not being good to herself, and so she needed to consider herself in the ahimsa and to do good to her, to do what she needed to do. Anyway, so sometimes the ahimsa thing, I didn't know how to respond to that either.
Right. So. Yeah, those are two kind of big questions. I'll just say, again, since time has sort of somehow, I feel like we've gone into a time warp. I don't know where an hour and a half went. But I think your first question about the vegetarian versus vegan, I think it's just a matter of education and explaining, I think, in the group setting to everyone that pretty much – nowadays, in these kinds of situations, a vegetarian group really is a vegan group. For example, vegetarian summer, it's called Vegetarian Summerfest, but it's been decades, I don't know how, at least 20 years since they've served any cheese or egg there. So that compassion and health really clearly dictate a completely plant-based meal. And you may want to kind of have that kind of educational talk that it's called vegetarian, but vegetarian in this case really means vegan. And maybe have speakers, like if I could come there, I would love to, and give an educational talk or I don't know if you have an opportunity for education, actual, like show some movies or show something on what dairy cows go through or talk about it. And in some groups, because we travel all over the country and we speak for vegetarian and vegan meetups and groups, that works just fine to keep everything vegan, even though it's a vegetarian group, just everybody just understands that. In some situations, I have actually seen there's a pushback by vegetarians where they really resist that, and they say, no, I mean, this is vegetarian, I'm going to bring this. This is what's going to happen, and then you can have kind of a split. I've seen that happen, and then I've seen it go a couple of different ways. Sometimes if there's a really strong vegan leader, they'll just, like actually in Sacramento, just said, listen, it's going to be vegan, and we're going to change the name to the vegan, to the, this is the vegan meetup, vegan group or whatever, and that's it. And in other cases, it's just been more of a group thing, and they've kind of just sort of kept it mainly vegan, but occasionally there'll be something vegetarian that's marked specifically, and it's usually on a different table or whatever. But I think, the whole vegetarian thing is on its way out. It's not going to be, it's more and more hard to justify eating dairy and eggs, but it still can be. I've seen it in a number of cities. It still can be a quote bone of contention. I shouldn't say that probably, but it's been it's not an easy thing to solve. But depending on the personalities involved and the social dynamics, so you want to just use your intuition, I think, and feel into the situation, what your role is, and how you can. You educate people about the cruelty in dairy products, which can be just as severe or maybe more than in meat and in eggs also. I think it's important, but you know, you're in Wichita, Kansas, so you're not, it's not like you're in California either. So you may have to just do as best you can, because a lot of people go vegetarian and then go vegan, so you may have to tolerate some ambiguity there, and do, you know, and just do the best you can with the situation. And then the other question was about, it was about
the yoga and ahimsa and doing harm to yourself by not eating animal products.
Right. Yeah, that's you know, it's a rationalization, and the yoga, the fact that her yoga instructor told, that's like my doctor telling me, my priest telling me, my minister telling me, my rabbi telling me, you know, God telling me, somebody, you know, my yoga instructor told me I need to eat some eggs or whatever, so now she's off the hook, kind of. You know, it's just, it's one of those situations.
And in her defense, she has been involved in animal rights for a long time, and she did say that she did not feel well, and yeah, I don't know all the, was not doing well on the vegan diet, and so that's why this recommendation was made, and so she is feeling much better since she has changed her diet. But I know, I mean, actually that's how I met her, was through like some animal rights activities. I really don't know.
Yes. Yeah, those are some of the hardest situations when someone says that, you know, because it's like this thing with Alex Jameson recently. She just said, well, I was a vegan, I tried, it just didn't work for me, and so now I'm back. And, you know, it just brings up a lot for people because, you know, because there's other people who don't feel well either on a vegan diet, and they stay vegan no matter what. And actually, in many cases, they learn to eat better. They stick with it. They get, instead of taking advice that advises them to eat meat and dairy, they get all second opinions, and they think, well, if I'm eating a pig or a fish, I might as well be eating a dog or a horse or something, you know, I mean, whatever. It's not an option ethically. And so if someone, you know, it's just that we live in a society where it's just, the norm is to see these, that's okay to, that's not only okay to do, you're supposed to do that. And so that's what changes it so much. It makes it so, and the placebo effect is so powerful, which as I described in the World Peace Diet, you know, and all these things. So it just depends on what kind of relationship you have with her. If she can read the World Peace Diet, I mean, because there are people that go back to vegan again after doing this, you know, if her conscience can be reawakened and her, another alternative opinion about foods that are plant-based that can supply her with any of the nutrients, because basically it's understood now that by the American Dietetic Association and really all the scientific information agrees that vegan diets are healthy, are adequate, and actually health-promoting for all people, you know, people, pregnant women, kids, nursing women, old people, whatever. I mean, all the nutrients that we need are there. It's maybe a matter of educating oneself a little bit more, but we don't have to say, okay, it didn't work, I'm going to eat some meat now, and then I feel better. That's not a way out. To me, that's not a way out, obviously, but to you it isn't either. So I would just do the best I can in a loving way to share there are other options available, you know. That's all I can say. I mean, given the fact that it's getting really late here.
I know. I apologize for, you know, I'm sorry
to
take this much time, but I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and yes, we need you to come back and talk to us again.
Right. Good. Yeah, we get, you know, it's great. You know, it's just these are the things that come up, and we have to not let ourselves be pushed around by these. You know, we have to listen and we have to educate ourselves, but we have to realize that, you know, it's not set up like we have to cause misery in order to be healthy. And I think that's becoming better and better understood. I mean, John McDougall is just one example. He and Gabriel Cousins, many MDs that work with people, I've asked them directly, is there any human being on the planet that has to eat meat or dairy to be healthy? And they basically say, no, there isn't. And in their experience of treating hundreds, you know, thousands of people, they say, no, there isn't anyone. you have to understand what you're doing, but you know, there's just so much information that people are getting from Joseph Mercola and everybody else saying that you need to eat animal foods to be healthy. And of course, it makes it much easier socially. It just is all kinds of payoffs to eating meat and dairy subconsciously for people too. So it's really important to understand all these things, and then use your intuition, and you can deal effect. You know, I think in a loving way with her, and maybe in the next month we'll find out that she's vegan again. That'd be good. Maybe she can come to Mark's, come to the Jubilee in Cincinnati and immerse herself. Sometimes it takes something like that too. You know, just a whole changing the environment for a few days and see a bunch of
others. Well, certainly give her the information. For it, because I
did
see her on a fairly regular basis, so I'll take her the information
and
see if she's
be
able to get there.
Great.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Talk to you later. Yeah, bye-bye. All right, well, I got a couple of hands up still. It's getting so late. I'll maybe just briefly, we have Terry Smith. Do you have your hand up? Go ahead. I'm not sure if it's Terry Smith. Actually, somebody from Dayton, Ohio. You know, it comes up like that. But
it's Ohio.
Persephone.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear you. I haven't heard from you in a while. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Yeah, it has been a while. So I'm glad to be on tonight. And I just wanted to speak a little bit to what that last person, I'm sorry I missed her name,
was saying,
about the potlucks and the vegetarian group and having the vegan potlucks. And my experience is a little bit different. I've been doing my vegan stuff. I've been taking a little bit more of an insidious approach lately. But at my spiritual community, I've been leading I call them Wheel of the Year gatherings every 6 weeks around, the pagan Sabbath. But I always tell people, I just call it a veg potluck. So I leave it up for interpretation. But what happens is almost everybody brings vegan food because I'm very outspoken about being vegan. Our minister's outspoken about being vegan. And what happens is people want everyone to be able to eat their food. And so every once in a while you get a newbie who brings something with cheese in it or whatever. But, what I find is it's like, oh, okay, and that's like the one dish off to the side that's not vegan. And then they start to catch on like, oh, I should really bring something vegan next time.
Right.
So I've been very kind of subtle about it.
Well, exactly. That's a really good point because if you bring something that's got cheese, a lot of people are just not going to be able to eat it, and it's not. It's like Mark Stroud, in this Unity in Cincinnati, you're talking about when you. It's like telling people who are disabled, well, too bad you can't get up the stairs and you just don't come in, But we know that's not right. You got to build them a ramp, Same thing.
Right.
You got to provide vegan food. It's just basic human decency.
Yeah.
You don't just reject people and throw them out and say too bad for you. You include them, and so it's almost hostile in a way. I mean, and people learn that they don't want to do that, so they bring vegan. So that's good.
And when you really do approach it from a place of love and acceptance, I find people who are vegetarian, they use these gatherings as an opportunity to explore making things that are vegan and getting away from the dairy and the eggs and. And there's gentle ways that you can, which anybody who knew me 5 or 10 years ago, it's shocking to them, but I'm really looking at gentle ways of talking to people and, that was so great. Thank you for bringing lasagna. Maybe next time, have you heard of Day of Cheese? It's really good. And maybe you could try making with that kind of cheese and then we could all eat it,
That's
the kind of approach that I've been taking lately.
Great.
Things. And it seems to be working.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Persephone. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate you sharing those important ideas. That's really helpful. Thanks.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you later. All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye. All right. Well, that's it. We have actually one last let me see here. Mark, you have something you want to add to this? I'd like to kind of wrap up the call, but go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick. I know that it's getting late, and just to weigh in on the potluck situation, it seemed like she was asking specifically what to do, and what you said is true. Use your intuition. That's what I tell everybody in my cooking classes always. Well, what's the next ingredient? Well, why don't you use your intuition? At the same time, we've had quite a bit of experience with this, and the studio, the yoga studio, is a vegan yoga studio. So just as you were talking about PCRM, everybody who works at the studio, we have maybe 20 teachers. Not all of them are vegan, yet they all know that only vegan food is at the studio. So when we have potlucks at the studio, it's always vegan, and occasionally somebody misunderstands. And so we always arrange everything on the tables and put the salads first and the desserts at the end and that kind of thing. And if we see something that we clearly know is not vegan, which is very rare, we'll take it off the table and find the person who brought it and politely explain to them that it's a vegan, plant-based only potluck. And they're always fine with it. There's just no upset at all. And it's happened a few times over the years. And before that, at the Earth Day potlucks, they used to have a vegan table and a raw table and a vegetarian table, and it just created chaos. People were putting the vegetarian food on the vegan table, and so vegans were eating cheese and dairy.
Getting mad about it, right?
Yeah, getting upset. And like you said, and it happened at the Unity Church, is that people finally realized that vegan is inclusive because anybody can eat it.
Everybody can eat vegan, right?
Everybody can eat vegan. So, and just to follow up on that AHIMSA thing, that does happen from time to time. And we'll sometimes hear a yoga studio that says, AHIMSA means don't hurt yourself when you're practicing asana, rather than extending compassion
in
the Lokai chant. So people just have to get educated, and I would suggest to that woman that she might, just like you said, get more information and get better advice, because we clearly don't. That's a perfect example of what's going on right now, which is all pervasive, which is that just from human to human, that's why we have poverty in the world, that we feel that we have to exploit other beings so that we can have more, or that we have to feel healthier. So to say, well, I'm going to exploit you so I can feel better, that's a contradiction in life. So.
Right. Great. Thanks, Mark. All right. Well, I appreciate it. these are good points. All right. Well, I'm going to thank you. We'll talk to you later. Thanks.
All right, Maddie.
Good night. So we're really a little bit over time. I'm going to close up our call. I want to thank everyone who was on the call listening, and those of course who shared with us their ideas and questions. Just want to mention that Madeline and I are doing some events. If you're in California or know people in California, here in Lake County this weekend, then Wednesday night in Monterey, Thursday night in San Luis Obispo, Friday night in Santa Barbara, then over the weekend, the 25th, 26th in Thousand Oaks, and then in Los Angeles. We're trying to actually set up one talk in Los Angeles still, but we do have the Vegan Spirituality Retreat, which will be on June 1st in Malibu. It's an all-day retreat. I'll be speaking for that, and I will both be there. We're going to be in our rolling home, which is kind of looking forward to that after several months here not being in it. And then we've got down in San Diego, in Vista, in the San Diego area, in Vista, California, at the Unitarian Church. Negan, the vegan, has helped setting up a lecture there on the World Peace Diet on Wednesday the 5th, and then in Orange County on the 6th, and then down in Pasadena that following weekend, and then in Modesto on Tuesday the 11th. So you can see all this if you just go to our website, willtuttle.com or willpeace.org, and click on schedule. Feel free also to connect in with our the various Facebook pages and the Circle of Compassion as well. Also, if you know anyone that might want to take the training, of course, we have the facilitator training online. And it's been going just great. We just finished up a World Peace Facilitator training in Petaluma. It was every other Tuesday night, and we had, I guess, about 15 people went through that, something like that. So that went really well. And it's just great to see the momentum, as everyone's been saying, is building. The word vegan, by the way, is just part of this, what we were just talking about, vegetarian and vegan. The word vegan, I think, really is getting around the corner and becoming more and more of an in thing and more accepted and not seen as strange. I think I said that before. We also have Vegan Palooza coming up in June, as I think I did mention, the 20th to the 23rd. Our next meeting will be 6 p.m. on Thursday the 20th, so it'll be right at the very beginning of Vegan Palooza. And we've just been in touch. I'm hoping this is going to work with the actor. Oh, gosh, I'm drawing a blank on his last name, James, in Babe there. We're going to be I think we're going to have him, actually, on Vegan Palooza, so we're really happy about that. And James Cromwell. James Cromwell. And so, anyway, there's lots of momentum, I think, is really continuing to build, and it's critical that it do so because the information that I'm gathering about climate weirdness and breakdown due to methane and everything else is really, really serious, as well as the economic devastation, the health devastation, and the environmental devastation caused by eating animal foods on every level. So this is absolutely critical for us, I think, the next year or two to spread the vegan message as much as possible. Please, if you have a chance, read my latest article on One Green Planet, Finding the Divine Mother Within Us All. That was written about, of course, Mother's Day. And I'm writing another article right now on the masculine dimension of all this, too. So that'll be coming out in the Veg World magazine soon. So I'm going to stop right here. Steve is not with us, so I'm going to be wrapping it up here. And I want to, again, thank all of you so much for your loving hearts, for your creative minds, for your courageous and creative spirits, and for being part of this movement. I'm looking forward to seeing you all physically, our paths crossing again. We do have this wonderful series of lectures coming up in the Northwest. We're going to be seeing our friends Christine and John up in Victoria, who are on the call tonight, and other people as well. So let us know if you'd like us to come to your area, and we'll do the best we can to make that happen. All right, so we're wrapping it up here. I don't know if I know how to do that great music that Steve usually does at this point. I'll do something. Here we go. But thank you all for joining us, and we'll look forward to June 20th at the usual time on Thursday evening. And until then, let's stay in touch through the various ways we have. Always feel free to email me if you have any questions or concerns. Much love to you all. Keep up the great work. Go forth and multiply and spread the message. And Madeline and I send you all our love. Thanks again for joining us.